what exactly is the bucket list item for me that is on my radar of the list of things that I do want to do? But now that I've lived in Stark County for all of these years, and even though we've been to a few of the Hall of Fame places, I've never set foot in a football Hall of Fame. Always wanted to go, thought I would go when we got here, and still had to go. And that was good away from my time. It's been good here, I'd rather go somewhere else. Not funny how things like that work. So, on the other side of that, there's something that happens. You go away, maybe for a week somewhere or a few days, and you start thinking about how you'd rather be sleeping in your own bed. Where's my phone? So, I know I've mentioned this before, and I promise to you I won't do this every week or even every other week. In fact, I'll put a cap on it here this week. But again, the article you mentioned gave me several rounds of papers or equations, and so I talked to at least one more today. You know, in interviews with the option on probable return, it's really that similar experience to what I mentioned to you. And they were also telling me 250,000 miles of cruise vacation to the moon. And when they came back to the lander, Reid Wiseman said these words on the 11th of this month. He said, "The more you launch, it feels like the greatest dream on earth." And I'll stop right there and say, you know, there's a few things that can dream that night. But for that, it was in a dream. Before you launch, it feels like the greatest dream on earth. And when you're out there, you just want to take it back. I think a lot of the work that we use to describe those sentiments and those feelings, I think we call that homesickness. The problem is that people experience homesickness in a lot of different ways, actually. But I think the simplest definition of it was this: longing for home and family. And I wonder if anyone, I wonder if anyone experienced that more than Jesus. In fact, I don't know if there is a better lens. Maybe there are other lenses of equal value, but there may be a better lens through which we try to view the life of Jesus than through the lens of longing for home. I mean, we know that he talked about his Father all the time. And we also know that he talked to his Father all the time, regularly. There's a number of times that we read about in the Gospels. There's a number of times he talked about his Father in indication. Jesus must have thought about home an awful lot. He mentioned his Father in the Gospel accounts over 150 times. John, that's what they recorded for us. John reminds us that the world wouldn't be able to contain the books if it had written everything. Jesus told his disciples, I'll summarize this one in John 14. I'm sure you know it. If you've ever been to a funeral, you know it. So nothing of whether or not you've ever read John 14, I'm sure many of you have. But I'll after a night in trouble, and believing God that we've also been meeting my father's house, and making pictures of mansions by the candidates and say rooms that will not go on the bank and so on and so on. The problem is that, as Jesus is speaking to his disciples, he will just wait. Just wait for him to see my father's house. He told them about working and recording that his own really loves him. Then he was happy for him. Because he was going to his father. When Jesus prayed in the garden of worship, we can pray a moment ago in John 17, the night that he was in heaven, he said to his father, glorify me now. We can go everything that will happen from that moment until Sunday morning and beyond the Sunday morning, of course, because it's 840 days, but at least that glorifying that. To glorify in one sense, it can be lifted up. Glorifying now with the glory I have. With you before the world was. It sounds like a longing for home. Because of the way it changed, I'm ready to come home now. If you could give us someone's life story, it's about 2 weeks worth of material, which, by the way, that's about what we have with Jesus. And during those 2 weeks, they mentioned their father or their father's house or their father's characteristics or their father's words or their father's deeds. Over 150 times, you might get the idea at some point that it would rather be there than here. Imagine, and one day, the early times, how do I? Imagine one day you apply the surface of a much better preacher. Came to your own ears to talk about all great, how great the other country queen was, what she's free for. At some point, you probably think to yourself, well, if the other person was so great, what are you doing here? It's not that Jesus wanted to be here with us. Jesus was glad to be here with us. He came willingly. He laid his glory aside willingly on our behalf. But I suspect that he turned his life with some turmoil. He had to think. If he had his voice, it sounds to me like he's never been at home with his father. I didn't know anything about Jesus or bringing Jesus' earthly ministry and experience with the concept of homesickness, what's his understanding of this? This is a lengthy way to do some of the things that he said, and certainly some of the things, if not all of the things, that he chose to do. It helps us understand how he is willing to do this. I want to say something like endure, but it wasn't just endurance. He was willing. He was willing to walk straight into death, straight into the grave, to walk in the process of getting there, to walk into the most unimaginable and undeserved that humanity has ever done, the cross. God tells us in Luke 9 and verse 51 and John 4, verse 4 and 9, that Jesus set his face to go to Jerusalem. The common reference in there is Isaiah 50 and verse 7. Messiah, the prophet, it says things like, quit. I have set my face like, quit. Jesus would not be deterred. Nothing was going to stop them from doing the Father's will. Nothing was going to stop us from going to Jerusalem to be rejected, to be tortured, and to die. He wasn't just ready to die. He was ready to go home. And the cross was the thing standing in the way of that. The cross is Jesus said, when you're out there, you just want to get that. We know there's something better that's waiting for us. It's not just we have to go through or run with them, but something better is waiting for us. It's not just we have to go through unimaginable torment to get there. We are prepared to do it. We'll get ourselves here. It's what waiting on the other side is far better. If we understand the value of what we think we're going to apply, it's far better. We'll go through the torture. We'll fix it. You might have heard about this in a man from there in Ohio. It's been several, a couple of decades ago now, 2003. That was April 2003. It's happened April 24th, if I'm not mistaken. He was in a game in Utah, and an 800-pound boulder did lie and pulled his wrist. He spent 5 days like that. And in 2003, I know he had cell phones. I remember having a cell phone in 1995. I didn't want that one, but I had to have it for work. So I know we had them, but they weren't as ubiquitous as they are now. But even at that, they weren't anything like they are now. They certainly didn't have the internet, microphones, and he didn't tell anybody. He didn't tell anybody that he was going, he didn't tell anybody where he was going, and I was standing somewhere in Utah. And it's risk to pinned under a 800-pound boulder. And so he spent 5 days crashing, removing water. He had, I think he had about 1 ounce of water. And he had a couple of small rings to feed, and he wrapped in that over 5 days, hoping that somebody would find him. All the while, his hand, the wrist, is dying. And after about 5 days, hoping that somehow somebody would find him, he realized it wasn't a problem. But thinking of what it could be, of what was to come, of what better came to my mind than the other side of this bed that he did. It's never fixed. What is it? He broke an arm to a body right now. And over the next hour, separated himself from the family. Nobody wants to do that. But if you know that there's something better waiting for you, even if you have to go through unimaginable torment to get there, you're prepared to do it. You'll make yourself do it. If what is waiting on the other side is far better. When Jesus reached for an illustration, describing unimaginable, indescribable, indescribable anguish. Turning into joy. He said this, whenever a woman is in labor, she has fed from the chicken. Whenever a woman is in labor, she has pain because her hour has come. But when she gives birth to a child, no longer remembers the anguish because of the joy that a child has been born into the world. Joseph decided, therefore, you do have grief now, but I will see you again, and your heart will rejoice. And no one will take away your joy from it. John 16:20-22. So, when I studied 7 days of the cross, I think to myself that the first one had to be one of the hardest guys, this one that said, Father, forgive me. How would I do that? I can't imagine that the difference in your sin, and that would be the thing I would have said. Not for a lot of other things. A whole lot of unlike that. But in reality, you can say that might have been a lot easier. Maybe much easier for Jesus to say. Maybe it was much easier for Jesus to say, Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they're doing, and it was for him to keep on saying, my hour hasn't yet come. In Luke 22, when she said to the disciples in the upper room for the Passover, he said, look, I have eagerly desired to eat the Passover with you. This Passover. He had contended many Passovers for decades. But this Passover, I have eagerly been waiting for this. Now, he said in John 12:27, my soul has become troubled, but what can I say? Father, save me from this hour. For this purpose, I came to this hour. Paul realized our failure in any of the things you need in God's own life in Philippians 1:21. My desire is to depart and be with Christ, which is far better. There's a homesickness that we experience. It's a natural homesickness that we experience in this life within. But then there's a homesickness that grows within us as our heart for Christ grows in us. The homesickness that we learn. And many of you have noticed it. When it happens, when you start to be serious in your life and trying to walk the way that Jesus walked, when you start calling the mind of Christ, you start to see with his eyes, and you start to hear with his ears, and you start to groan in your spirit. And this home becomes less and less comfortable the place to live in. Comfortable as it can be. Beautiful as it is. Wonderful as the experiences are. And wonderful as the people are that we love. Still yet, the world that we're in, the home that we reside in, that we see with the eyes of Christ, that we hear with the ears of Christ, that we think as he thinks, that we walk as he walks, this world becomes less and less comfortable a place to be in. We start to write and sing songs like, this world is not my home. Or that version of the song, Jewelland, that begins with this line, I'm kind of homesick for a country to which I've never been before. When we learn to think like Jesus and walk like Jesus, we don't have to choose to alienate ourselves, to separate ourselves. Keep walking, and the world will alienate you. You go to work,
you're on the TV. You're out and about. You thank each other for Thanksgiving. And you realize more and more that while you want to stay, and we have our reason for that, at the same time we come to the realization, we're not sitting in so much. If you've been hearing this that, then that's not something. Consider the atmosphere to either death, who endured some hostility of sinners against his God. He spent 30 years here. And I wonder if those 30 years in this place felt something like eternity. I don't know if I've been experiencing more wondering what I've been experiencing from the dark side of the room than Jesus did. For he says, when you're out there, you just want to be back. Well, I probably let people know that when he came out of his hour and time, that Calvary was near, he set his face toward Jerusalem. And undoubtedly, the brutality of what lay before him wasn't good. But he knew all that he does, that he would only get to the other side, that he would only get back home. So he did what he had to do. He woke up this week and he took out his pocket knife. And put the door and set the door to him. And for the joy of bringing the same two of us along with him, he did what he had to do. Our Father is calling you, if you're not one of his. It's called you to endure the scourge, carry your cross, to go to the place of the skull, to make the good confession that Jesus made, that he is the Son of God, to be buried with him there, that he can rise to new life. The bride and the spirit invite you home, call you home, and we encourage you in a moment if you're feeling this in your son, set your face. We encourage you to go and see you, invite your father back, and we sing this song together. Thank you.